from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear. I'm already against the next war. Hashtag why I am anti-war. Antiwar.me. Now, we had, you know, everybody I went up to with the sign at the Libertarian National Convention, they all said, gimme, 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 gimme. And I'll, you know, and they held it. There's a federal Judge Buttrick. There's a the Oklahoma delegate. Yeah, that's one thing. I got it. You know, I did not know this. Angela can help me out here. We're talking to Angela Keaton, antiwar.com. Okay, she's going to, you know, what the, you know, when are we going to be against this empire thing? And we had the National Libertarian Party nominations of, did we hear a whole lot about war? Not that I remember. I mean, it was definitely, you know, anti-war theme, so, but it certainly wasn't emphasized. And the only person, I don't know if Angela knows this, yeah, I think I texted you, the only person that refused to hold the sign, pass, was Bob Barr. 2008 presidential candidate for Libertarian Party. And that tells you just how far the party has strayed from the core of anti-war. Wasn't the anti-war meme kind of, you know, one of the reasons why Libertarian Party even started, Angela?
The Libertarian Party started in opposition to the Vietnam War and Nixon's press controls.
And I'm just wondering what happened. You know, that's one thing that, who has been, it's been John Buttrick. Federal Judge John Butt, he's even done presentations on it. He's like, why haven't we embraced this? You know, where's this big, giant, humongous chunk of we should get some, you know, on the anti-war thing? Where is anti-war? Are you it? I mean, is there anyone else that's consistent out there of just, we marched in, we can just leave thing? I mean, other than Ron Paul, I mean, antiwar.com, who else, where's your competition?
You mean within the libertarian movement?
Within the anything movement.
Well, within libertarianism, there isn't much competition. There are organizations and individual writers who very much are always against war, and that would range for everything from Future Freedom to Will Grigg. So, I mean, within libertarianism, there's certainly plenty of support. It's our inability to turn that into political action that's been difficult.
Well, you know, that's my point. You have a lot of these individuals, and there's consistent individuals, but and I'm not like a big, giant organization guy, but, you know, as part of the movement, it was always you would expect during a presidential campaign there would be more drumbeat to not go to war. And I'm going, yeah, where is that? You know, Bernie Sanders and Trump's not going to take it on. Sure as hell not Clinton, you know, and here comes the libertarians, and hey, can I be a little anti-war, please?
It's very, very difficult when you're dealing with, let's say, and I probably am using this differently than left libertarians do, but there's a certain amount of vulgar libertarianism that basically comes down to socially liberal, fiscally conservative is how I would describe the vulgar aspects to it. It's a very weak and not entirely accurate way of viewing libertarianism. It's helpful if you want to bring in people who are just barely have an understanding, and that's fine if you bring some people in who just barely have an understanding, but there is no internal education within the Libertarian Party, and there's always been a noisy and entirely useless faction that has screamed, oh, we don't do education, but that faction is dwindled to a dwindled to almost nothing. However, I still don't see this, we were always promised a return to internal education when you bring people into the party to explain what libertarianism actually is and what it isn't. The idea, though, that, I mean, limited government or no government at all, regardless of whether it's those two, you're minarchist, anarchist, or constitutionalist, support for empire, support for the Pentagon, Department of Defense, and everything the way it's currently structured is completely in opposition to that. There's nothing there. I mean, the Pentagon is communism. You know, it's a welfare program for a certain segment of the population. And while I certainly have sympathy for those who are destroyed by the economic system that our Federal Reserve and capitalist economy has created, one still has to take personal responsibility. And when you sign in for the military, you're signing up for a welfare program. So you're creating nothing and you're taking a great deal. That's assuming, of course, that the enterprise that you just signed up for doesn't take your own life or take your arm or take your penis or any of the other things that happen when you go to war. So it's still baffling to me. Professionally, I have nothing negative to say about any of the organizations within the movement who are against war, specific individuals perhaps, but organizationally we work with everyone and we work with whomever the tickets are, the third parties that support anti-war. I just think that once again there is a slightly missed opportunity here, because the one thing that people seem to coalesce around or seem to ring true in the Donald Trump's lunacy is that Iraq was a bad idea and that we don't need any more Bush family wars.
Yeah, but they're not giving it up. I mean, there is more on the horizon, and they're just going up to the bear and thumping them on the sternum, and Russia's like going, you just keep that crap up. And they're going, yeah, that's it, get mad. And there's somebody else's agenda at play here, and I don't see, certainly with the economics that, I'm just certain what's happening. I mean, it's just so there's no getting around it. And they need a mushroom cloud for distraction. The bread and circuses is going to be bread and war. I mean, so I don't know what to do other than to lay the foundation of understanding for people. But what do you think needs to happen? Is it, Justin Bieber needs to, come out against war or something? I mean, what does it take?
That would be extremely helpful if he did, actually. That so would it be if the Kardashians and others came out against the war. That's where, it's not going to be when the libertarians, whatever the libertarians have done for the anti-war movement, they've done. I mean, their largest contribution to the anti-war movement is antiwar.com. That's just a fact. That's a fact that can easily be backed up with statistics. What does need to be done is there needs to be a change in the popular culture. I think you did a very good job shaming people with our sign, which you can download from antiwar.me. Stating and debating a selfie, you're already against the next war, and we post it all over the place. And we do it with all kinds of people, and we love the pictures that you took, Ernie. And it was great. There was both celebritarians and regular, normal libertarians. So that worked just fine. We have a collection of the photos on our Facebook account and on Twitter, and we'd like to see that spread. And that's a very good way of it's a very effective way of shaming the handful of people who can't quite get that in the movement about war. And I like to remind people, because this is always I'm always having to speak to the remaining leftovers of libertarian culture of war, that you have no ground to complain about racism if you're not against war. You've managed to discredit yourself just by opening your mouth at that point. And if you're not against war, you're not against genocide, you're not against occupation, you've done nothing to make anti-racism anything real other than just something that makes whatever white liberal is inside of you feel good about itself. And feeling good about yourself is not ideology. It's irrelevant. No one cares how you feel about yourself. I certainly don't.
Well, how do you feel about yourself? I mean,
I feel great. It's an honor and privilege every day to be Angela Keaton, even when you have to, even when the schedule says 3 hours of sleep, then speak to Ernie on the phone.
Oh, thank you. Well, the energy that you have towards this comes from what? I mean, your passion towards this particular issue. I mean, you've been in the libertarian movement for a long time, and was anti-war always kind of the undertone, or you just kind of found yourself there, or is that what your focus was? What?
I'm an old school objectivist. I deal with reason and logic, and there's no point in wasting my time being against government unless I'm going to go to the source of all the problems and start there. Start with the biggest problem.
Biggest problem: war. War, more. We're getting some details in the plan and what the whole program was, why we're doing the signs and such, when we come back. Angela Keaton, antiwar.com, and .me. We'll find out what the .me is. We'll be right back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Angela Keaton, antiwar.com and antiwar.me. Yeah, what is, Angela, help me out with the .me thing. What's the difference?
The antiwar.me is a user-friendly modern site because we're building up, we're appealing more to youth activists. We're looking forward. There was a time when I thought antiwar.com wouldn't be needed in 2016, but I don't know what the hell drugs I was taking at that point. No, it's obviously that it's unfortunate that antiwar.com is a long-term project, which I have to think about, you know, what happens post, you know, the moral coil of Justin Armando and others, because clearly we're not making as strong a headway in ending empire as I thought we might with some time, at least when I was younger and slightly more idealistic. The important thing, though, is that we have to think beyond libertarians. I've tried very, very hard to move the libertarians, and the grassroots libertarians certainly understand the importance of war. And there's people, by the way, in high places, and including, you know, the Cato Institute and others, who completely understand this position and entirely agree with us. But getting real political movement, political action on that has been difficult. And part of it is, too, because it's, you know, people ask, you know, what are the benefits of protest? Do protests drive people away more than harm, particularly because Answer and Code Pink, and no disrespect to either, they've done all the heavy lifting during the years when we needed protests. But, you know, what would be the kind of protest that would draw a family, that would bring in ordinary people, that would bring in people of faith, that would bring in normal people, not activists, not people who hang around at Porkfest, as ever wonderful as our brothers and sisters are, we have to think more about getting Ma and Pa Kettle against the war. That's where the heart is. And what do we do to take these people who believe that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are going to end wars, and regardless of what the hell Sanders and Trump's actual positions are irrelevant, it's the image that those people have coalesced around, that they believe that these are more peaceful candidates. How do we bring those people in board on the anti-war movement? And, of course, for people who've been part of Libertarian Peace Camp, we know full well, it's much, much easier to turn people onto the ideas of libertarianism when they see us agree with them and in action and see how effective we are on this message. And then they realize that, you know, we're not the horrible, fracking, racist kookballs that we are deliberately portrayed as in the media, and there's an obvious reason why we're portrayed that way. It's to make libertarianism as unappealing as possible to groups that would benefit the most from a real focus on individual rights and the end of the state, or at least the end of the state's brutality anyway. So,
let me ask you this. I mean, do you believe that our efforts to free their mind as a kind of a foundational, fundamental, you own yourself and it derive from kind of thing is a way to be anti-war? Or do you think the net is cast larger if you just focus on just freaking anti-war and you got more overlap, and then how best to do that? And, you know, and I do want to get into this campaign, the concept of the I'm already against the next war with the pictures and Armistice Day in February, and the plan, the build-up, the campaign. Do you have anything to say about that?
Oh, well, there's quite a bit. You know, we work with our was one of our major affiliate groups, which is Bitcoin Not Bombs, which is, you know, they've created campaigns such as, you know, Don't Be Evil Google and the Peace Haiku Contest, both which are wildly popular. We had amazing memes. The Google campaign dealt with when Google Ads decided that antiwar.com, after 11 years of service with Google Ads, had violated the gore and violence content. It was mostly bogus, and it really did.
Of course it was. It was because you had pictures that had been up there for over a decade.
I mean, ideologically aside, there are people saying, well, you know, Google can do business with whom they want. That's certainly true. Google violated their contract here.
Well, more than that, it's if you did a Google image search on any of these images, they had, you know, Abu Ghraib, they had 15 gazillion more heinous or whatever, nothing compared to what you guys had. It was a control mechanism and using finances to try and determine what did and didn't get discussed. And you see it on Facebook and stuff. I mean, the one thing is, like, you know, I give a crap about Trump, but they, you know, we're going to got to chop it in the trunk for Trump, and we're going to kill Trump and get out some Trump and go get some Trump. And you say something, you know, self-esteem damaging about somebody's weight, and they take you off. You say you're going to kill somebody, and they're like, eh, it's okay. And I'm going, what the hell is going on? And when Google did what they did to antiwar.com, and they did the We Are Change, and they do the Mox News, and they do to us, and they do, you can see the manipulation. Oh, no, we don't do that. Then it becomes obvious and admitted and stipulated, oh, we're going to have Glenn Beck come and represent the libertarians and say, oh, yeah, you know, Facebook, they got it. It's all covered, man. They didn't mean to, you know, kind of edit the news feed on your Facebook and have certain things up and push. And kind of, the manipulation is so obvious, so there, and so open that I'm wondering if it's already not just understood by most people that it's going on, and they're just looking for leadership to bust out. But who's that? Gary Johnson?
I mean, they saw leadership. I mean, antiwar.com didn't crumble in the least because Google, and a significant amount of money, that's to be sure, the lads pulled. Instead, we hired an ad firm that was owned by an objectivist and a libertarian, so we knew we were getting the right kind of service and people who honor their contracts, and kept money inside our community instead of giving money to outsiders.
Amen.
So that's really important there. And donors who had worked with AdSense decided to use the money that they were using with Google AdSense to donate to antiwar.com on a regular basis. So, and then Bitcoin Not Bombs took the ball and created the whole meme contest where, with, you know, playing on Google's slogan about don't be evil, and amazing memes, including one by anti-war news top of the minute announcer Daryl W. Perry, is, I believe, a finalist in the meme contest, and the memes were amazing. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what they do, we're going to keep turning it around. I mean, we turned the FBI catastrophe into something where, you know, now I will be talking about COINTELPRO in New Hampshire at the end of the month, and it's made me just more aware of the history of surveillance of the anti-war, which has been going on the whole time. I mean, none of this is new, and you know, the FBI has made busts as recently as 2010 on anti-war activists. I mean, this has been going on for a very long time, all the last century, certainly. So we turn that into something good every time. So it doesn't, I mean, it makes no difference in terms of, you know, it only temporarily hurts antiwar.com and ends up benefiting our ability to reach more people.
Every time.
It's a lot of tough crap. But I'm happy, though, to read off in a little bit all the wars that both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump support.
Please.
You know, because I just want you to understand. Though, I mean, today in here in my state, home state of California, well, not really my home state, but this is where I live forever now, Hillary Clinton is supposed to walk away today with her, you know, the finishing of her coronation, the slow motion coronation. But Hillary Clinton, though, really, she's really something. She played a role in the destruction of Iraq, the Afghan surge, the Yemen coup, Libya war. She destroyed Libya, guns for Syrian Al Qaeda. She destroyed Pakistan, Mali, Ukraine, Myanmar, and Honduras. I left out most of Middle Europe.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering who her supporters are. I mean, the rank and file kind of, if they're going to stay Democrat and be real, I don't even know how the dividing line between Bernie and Hillary, and we'll find out what's going on in California. Is it a winner take all? Some? Is it going to be counting on superdelegates? Is he going to stay in forever? We'll find out.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Monday, gold is down $1 at $1,244 per ounce. Silver is even at $16.46 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $581. Friday's big jump in metals was reacting to bad jobs numbers and growing concern about a possible Fed rate hike. Protect yourself. Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Okay, when we come back, I wanted to get the kind of the Armistice Day thing, the plan, the build up, the campaign, or do you even know?
Oh, yeah, we're definitely building up. I mean, the details are still being worked out, but we've been working with the poppies, and I'm already against the next war because whoever, you know, basically this is the focus on the November election, that regardless of who's in power, we know that there's an empire that's not going to change.
Yeah, so I want to get, you know, into that because I thought that's why I wanted to do it, because I thought it was a good idea. And the, yeah, I got it going. Yeah, I enjoyed doing it. I'm just like, you know, come on, man. Show some love. The what we're gonna go ahead and do is come back, go through that plan, and then how it's going to schedule in with the election after, what's going on after inauguration. Let's just get that out, and then it'll spark from there. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Cool. We'll be right back. Oh, I wanted to tell you about the convention.
Okay.
You know the atmosphere that was there in 06 when they were just, yeah, we're gonna, you know, eat it from the inside and bar and eat and get over it, you know, and the platform and all that kind of crap. That atmosphere was replaced with, well, you had the big, you know, Gary Johnson contingent of we got to elect Weld kind of crap, and that was, you know, like less than half, you know, just barely half. The rest of them was, it was Austin Peterson, the young, I got, you know, a plan social media thing. There was some a little bit of McAfee. He didn't take it. He didn't understand the process enough, but he had an impact. I'll tell you, it was Daryl Perry. You know, Daryl and Colley, man, they had a freaking presence of 20% of damn it. And with all of the influence, and my big goal in the entire thing was to get enough tokens so that Daryl was on the national C-SPAN debate. That was my whole goal of the whole thing. So.
Yes.
We just hammered on that and got every smoke break out and drinking, eating, doing, partying, hovering around butterfly mothing thing was just me pollinating that concept. It was for the first time Arizona in the presidential first round, there was not one NOTA. And I'm going, yep, everybody was pretty much represented up there. The tapestry of the representation, certainly from in the hall, was the best that I've ever seen in the presentation of the tapestry of libertarian philosophy on national television in the debate. So, and Feldman knocked it out of the park. You know, I mean, that he made it fun. Well, all of those guys and the VP thing, and behind the scenes, I want to tell you about the Alicia Dern, Bill Weld thing. That was freaking weird. And what was going on there. But I got a big giant dose of, I can see all the guys that have been trying to take over, the Rutherfords, the Red Pass, the Larks, the, you know, Star, the Carlene, all that stuff was pushed out and repudiated. When they did,
and they were pushed out and repudiated a long time ago, just no one had these stones to tell them to shut up.
Well, it's getting there. All right, here we go.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. This is Ernest Hancock. I wanted to get the details on, you know, yeah, right there. I had Donna's, I got down a little bit. I got this scratch on my back. Oh, okay. Thank you. Couldn't concentrate. The what we wanted to do is the campaign, why I'm already against the next war. That is part of something. It's an ongoing project that has some deadlines and times and goals. And Angela, would you walk us through that and see what we're looking at?
Yes, and you know, keep in mind that Bitcoin Not Bombs will be announcing and finalizing things, but you can find them all at antiwar.me, which allows anti-war activists to see what we're doing at antiwar.com, the things that you can do. This is not about news. We have 100 news stories every day. I mean, you know what's there. This is really about what you can do, especially for keyboard activism. A lot of people don't really want to do much for activism. So this gives them something they can do at home. But mostly, though, I mean, it's an important effort where we already know that the empire is a permanent fixture. I mean, it's not going away anytime soon. This is the outgrowth of big government, right? The whole thing. It's an empire, worldwide police state. The police state is everywhere now for everyone. So I'm already against the next war is letting people know that we acknowledge the reality of the war party, that whomever wins, the war party wins. There's not going to be there'll be no substantial changes in policy. And even people that you think, I mean, and, you know, Bernie Sanders is good at, and I don't think this is entirely intentional, I think there's a certain amount of cluelessness that he operates on a day-to-day basis and has a great deal of denial, that he's somewhat of a more peaceful candidate, though, you know, Bernie Sanders' record is not very good on actual. I mean, he was against the Iraq War, you know, and that's certainly a start, but he's hardly a peace candidate. But he's what passes as a left. It's amusing to me, and this is what I mean by, you know, it's too many libertarians who know nothing about political theory or philosophy. They're so unschooled in education, they scream things like socialist whenever they see Bernie Sanders because they have no left-right concept. But Bernie is what passes as a lefty in the last days of empire. But he supported intervention, which, you know, means mass murder, in Kosovo and Afghanistan. He approved of the drone wars. He supported regime change in Syria. And he's been an absolute drama queen about Ukraine and Russia. And also, too, if you remember, and I actually had to watch this for work, otherwise I would never be home on a Saturday night in West Hollywood, he, on his first Democratic policy debate, which oddly enough was on a Saturday night, I don't know why, opened with declaring war on the Muslim world. And he's also voted, by the way, to fund every foreign intervention since the 90s. And that's the peace candidate in the race. The other two were worse.
Yeah, the others are worse.
But regardless of that, there are enough people, there's enough of a core within the Sanders movement and within Trump and among Trump people that are war skeptics. How do we harness that energy? What do we do with those people? Do we give, you know, we've got to give them a place to go. And, you know, hopefully we can, you know, hopefully libertarians can be on the forefront of that, since libertarianism, you know, is...
Okay, so this campaign, you got the signs, you get the pictures. What do you do with the pictures? So where are they going? What's happening to them? What will be happening?
You take a picture of yourself, and you send it to us. You can send it to me. You can post... You can put it online and tag antiwar.com, especially on Twitter. It's really easy for us to get attention, and we'll spread that picture far and wide. But we want to see more than just libertarians do it. We want to see people on the left do it. We want to see a lot of people in the Green Party do it. And that's going to be where we break out. We want it to spread. We don't want this to be just libertarian insiders. I mean, it's beautiful to see people who we all recognize, but what we want to see are normal people. We want to see normal people against the war, not just activists. So that's where we're moving towards. And, you know, hopefully this will, by the time Armistice Day gets here, we'll have a lot more awareness.
Well, tell me about Armistice Day. When is it? What do you plan on doing? How does the schedule of this roll out?
Well, you know, it will be a week into the new president elect, right? They're going to have, you know, the Veterans Day will be, you know, what, 6 days after the election, whenever the hell the election is, I don't vote. But, you know, it's supposedly, you know, to honor military veterans, right, who served in our armed forces. And, you know, you had Armistice Day and Remembrance Day, which were a little more peace-oriented. There's a little more of a tinge of regret. As with Veterans Day, it's like, oh, thank you for taking my money and going to kill someone. Or thank you for getting your leg shot off for me, even though I certainly didn't ask for you to make that sacrifice. And I thought, I don't ask for forgiveness for sounding cold. It's highly unfortunate when someone comes back from a war like that, horribly, you know, with horrible injuries that cannot ever really truly be addressed. It's horrible not only for the person, but for the rest of us who financially support that situation, which is basically the moral obligation, since God knows we live under the blessings of empire. So these sorts of, the Veterans Day idea really is kind of removed away from the old idea where we're trying to celebrate peace. We don't want any more veterans. We don't want any more injured people in the name of supporting war and militarism, supporting occupation and supporting torture. We don't want any more of that. And Veterans Day in some ways kind of glorifies that. So it's not, we're trying to turn that around. We want it to be a little bit different. We want it to return to the old way. And remember, you know, the hostilities of World War One, 11th hour, 11th day, 11th month, blah, blah, blah. But what we really want to do is to stop glamorizing and glorifying veterans and start talking about what evil it is when we send people over.
Okay, let me give you a good example of that. First, I want to know, we got Memorial Day, Armistice Day, Veterans Day. How many of these, you know, Memorial Day was defined as what?
Memorial Day is remembering the people in the war who died.
Okay, then we go Armistice Day, Veterans Day, same thing. I mean, what's up?
No, and Veterans Day is a celebration of vets. These are two different holidays, and they're, you know, done, I mean, the way they're addressed. You know, on Veterans Day, we now go around thanking a vet for what, I don't know, but, you know, we thank them for something. Armistice Day is really about, you know, when we, you know, peace, ending the hostilities.
Now, that was a day, I don't know if it's recognized as it's a national holiday or not, but it was after World War One thing?
Yes, and it was, you know, November 11th.
Okay, now, when's Veterans Day?
November 11th.
Yeah, see, so they're the same thing, or they're two separate things, or they just happen to be on the same day? I mean, how did that work out?
It's an obvious shift in terms of getting people to think about it very, very differently.
So is Veterans Day, is Armistice Day, they just call it Veterans Day now? Or, you know, there was a PR campaign in the 50s or some crap? I mean, what?
It's taking out the sting of what we're actually talking about on November 11th. Instead of talking about mass murder, instead of talking about, you know, how we drafted, you know, in other words, you know, enslaved young men and then went over and let them get killed or let them get horribly traumatized, let them get brutalized, that, you know, instead we want to thank the vets. In other words, we're trying, you know, it's a very, very good, it's a very natural, organic PR campaign, really, to get people to think positively about service, and I put service in air quotes. You know, a lot of people don't serve because they choose to. They serve because they were either drafted, you know, an earlier part of history, or because they, you know, grew up in places where economic choices are few. And, of course, all that can be traced to our amazing free market, you know, capitalist, beautiful system that we have in the U.S. And I'm saying that, of course, with my eyes rolled, since we obviously know that there is no free market here in the U.S. except what we can do individually, you know, in private between each of us, or what we can do on the blockchain. It's a federal holiday, and it's a national holiday. We're all supposed to feel this wonderful feeling, as opposed to, you know, being, it's supposed to be sober, it's supposed to be somber, it's supposed to make us think about why we should be sad about the horrors of World War One and World War Two. Instead, you know, we celebrate people, you know, young people signing up and signing their lives away, which is horribly distasteful, but how can you, the only way of covering up how distasteful it is by encouraging people to think differently about it.
You know, when we come back, we're going to go into break. I want to tell you on air how Memorial Day played out in the Libertarian National Convention in Orlando last weekend.
And remind me to tell you a story about Vets at antiwar.com when we get back.
Okay, Vets, antiwar.com. Angela, got it. All right. But we got, there's a couple of good stories. Give you a kind of the flavor of what's going on. You know, where the focus is, the mindset in this election cycle. I think it was an interesting observation that you will find informative.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free. free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From your what?
I want to break free from your lies.
The lies, the lies, the lies. You know, the one story I wanted to relate to Angela and tell you guys on air, I've been busy doing some work here, but at the Libertarian National Convention, Angela, there was, the new guys, Nick, the national chair, kind of had everybody stand up, okay, your first convention. All right, how many's been to 2, 3, 4, 5? And it was probably half, that this was their first convention or more. And I'm going, okay, a lot of new guys. Well, a lot of it was, younger social media kind of whatever. And the other were, the Republican, we're kind of sick of them, but we got, Gary Johnson, I'm interested, and Bill Weld, and they, were bust in of whatever. So they're going to explain it to us. These older Republican blue hair, we're not doing it right. And the reason you're not getting elected is because it's Memorial Weekend, and where's your honor of the troop parade, and how come you don't have an American flag up on the podium up there, and I don't remember a Pledge of Allegiance, and I don't remember where's the gold fringe on, or without gold fringe, whatever. And so I'm going, wow, they're stepping right into a buzzsaw. They have no idea what they're talking about. Well, libertarians are not about pledging the state, and the empire kind of thing. I mean, they don't make a big deal out of it. They're not just, knee-jerk, we're do it because somebody else did it on TV thing. It's just not in our DNA. Well, what happened was they're going, well, we need to memorialize. I have a resolution to suspend the rules. We have a minute of, silence for those that died for our freedom. And I just couldn't contain myself. And the children they killed. I mean, I'm just like, this is, oh. So Nick, very, very, witty and quick, the national chair goes, I think it's appropriate to have 1 minute of silence for all that die in war or something like that. And I go, very cool. And it was, I'd never heard it so quiet at a libertarian anything. For a full minute, it was, I put a minute on the clock. Boom. Complete pin drop silence for the minute everybody got theirs. And the biggest thing is that a lot of the, the Republican types coming over think that they're going to explain it to us got a lesson. There was a reason why we don't have the flag up there. I mean, it's not conscious. It's just don't care. And what the only time I saw a waving American flag was behind, in the video and promotion of Gary Johnson. Ooh, look, I got American flag. Man, they definitely wanted to put that bad boy in there. So,
well,
that's
I don't give out compliments very freely, and I'm not I don't have a high threshold for nonsense. But the libertarians are very lucky to have Nick Sarwak and Wes Benedict, because both of those men could choose to do many other things with their life, and they choose to sacrifice to do that. So I think that the Libertarian Party really needs to count its blessings there, and has some really strong people running for president. And what I mean by strong is people who are really principled, or people who are just instinctively libertarian. So very, very blessed. Libertarian Party of 2016 is not the party of 2006.
Oh, but the bad guys are going to be coming to New Orleans on Monday in 2018. And I was making that point. Some of our, tried and true, we want to rule the world people, where, you could see quorum calls and cog and bylaws of the kind of, and you could see the machination. I'm going, look, there's only a couple times I said, I just want everybody to understand what's going on here. This has a history, what they're trying to do here. This is a Monday after everybody's left for the weekend, 2018 screw you thing that's going on here. I just want everybody to know that, And so they're not being able to get away with it anymore, just from experience of a lot of us that have been around. But it was, Nick did such, I always look at, and I've been, officer in the party and chair of the county, all that kind of stuff, and run for national chair several times and so on. But I could do better than that. Oh, man, I can't believe they let it get out of control. Oh, they're not. I could not possibly have done a better job than Nick did. I was dumb. He would go down, just a conflict of interest. He wanted to nominate somebody, and Jim Lark, former chair, would take over within 20 seconds. It was chaos. And literally, you think I'm kidding, 20 seconds. And then Nick get up, and it was just his demeanor. And cut through, I can tell you some other stuff off air, kind of, behind the scene LNC stuff, but I'm telling you, he took care of business. And I'm going, Wow. And he tells the story, I didn't even meet him or knew who he was until the Tuesday before we left for the convention when we had a hearing in U.S. District Court on some ballot access stuff going on here in Arizona. He asked me if I was going to run for chair again. And I go, I don't know. If there's something interesting happening, I'm like, yeah, I don't care. And he goes, yeah, that guy, you know, that's there now. Oh, who's that? He goes, me. I go, who are you? You know, that's how much attention I pay. I don't care, you know. Well, come to find out, I know who he is. He was Frank Sarwark's son that would come to our meetings, and Nick would come to, you know, meetings that I'd chair and so on when he was 12 years old. So as he grew up and he went on to law school and so on, and his family has a car lot, and he works there, and he does, you know, he's got skills. And I'm going, damn. It's this multi-generational thing that only people have been around long enough, like Angela and I, can see. And that was what I saw happening. Generation Next is starting to take over the Libertarian Party from the inside. And the philosophy is being resurrected. And we just got to hold the coke the puss off one more election cycle in 18 in New Orleans. And with whatever successes we might be able to get this time, which I don't know this Weld thing. I'm not able to do a whole lot with, but it's going to be, the economics is what's going to do everything. I'm just waiting for the mushroom cloud of, you know, bread and circuses and distraction of whatever, because they're the empire, they, them, those aren't going to be able to keep it together. So I just wanted to share with you, you know, and Powell died right before our senior editor, he died just a few days before the convention. And I had memorial service this Sunday. And that he got some attention, you know, from at the convention. So that was cool. So, but I wanted to tell him about it. And as much as I wanted to tell you, the flavor has changed. And there's still the, you know, the battle. We got work to do. But I think there might be more support for what you're doing, Angela, in the party. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this is kind of the running gag. You know, we're in the middle of pledge drive. And the Memorial Day weekend was very slow for Memorial Day weekend, which is usually very good for us. And I said, well, yes, because so many of our donors and supporters are in Orlando on their seventh beer.
Holding up their sign.
That's, you know, the Libertarian Party, where our founders got started. They met and, you know, did activism largely because of, you know, Murray Rothbard and the Radical Caucus too. And that's, you know, the genesis of antiwar.com, the Libertarian Party. So it's not, this is not an anti-Libertarian Party rant. It's actually, you know, the Libertarian Party, if you look at the regular members, they are against war, and they probably put it in their probably top five issues, or the whole general thing of the war on terror being a bunch of nonsense, the whole thing, empire, police state, in some form or another, it's there. And for many different reasons. I mean, some because they're anarchists, some because they're Christians, some because they're vets. And what I wanted to say was the one thing about the job that is consistently rewarding is how many vets every week read the site and write, or talk about how Scott Horton or Justin Raimondo changed their lives, or how they talk about they listened to a Tom Woods podcast and learned about us, and they wanted to thank us for, you know, telling the truth about the things that they know for a fact, but, you know, aren't well received when they speak about them. A lot of our readership are vets, and a lot of our, you know, financial support, you know, comes from veterans. People should listen to them more, but the only time we want to listen to veterans is when we can, you know, use them as decorative, you know, things basically, you know, for Fox News purposes. Here's this horribly scarred person. Yay, service. Yay, please sign up. Yay, 17-year-old. This is what
you're
doing.
Wounded Warriors. We need much money for it. I've seen them at all kinds of different events, and kind of the cut goes to somebody making some money. And, you know, during Ron Paul's 08, and I'm sure later in his 12, it was made known that the biggest donor by all the others combined didn't equal veterans donating to Ron Paul because of his anti-war position.
Well, you know, and I, you know, these are people who can speak to it directly, and greatest peace activists, you know, have been veterans: Ron Paul, Howard Zinn, Daniel Ellsberg.
You know, there's a core. There's an infrastructure ready. And I'm glad that, you know, we're already against the next war is, because, you know, whoever the president-elect is, there's going to be the next war thing. And, what's going to happen in February? There was some march or something that was going on, too.
This February, next February?
Yeah, next February, after inauguration or Student for Liberty got something going, or
be it would be a wonderful thing if it happens. You know, we'll see. And also, I just wanted to mention, though, that this has been not a great year. We've lost a lot of great people for peace, Daniel Berrigan, Michael Ratner, and now Muhammad Ali. We're just very lucky that we got to walk the time they did.
You know, there's a lot more stars coming. There we go. Thank you, Angela. Okay, go ahead and kill the video, Donna. I want to talk to her. Hold on a second. Okay, this is what happened.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello. Oh, Adam Kokesh. Oh, my God. It's been days since I talked to Adam, so we got to have him on the show to tell us all about his new project, For the Love of Freedom. All right. You know, Adam, if he's not getting loved on enough and enough attention, he's going to go out and drum it up and make and advocate for it and kind of pace. All right. Let's see what he's got planned. Now, the Love of Freedom tour is going to start here in Phoenix in August 27th. And then it's like, I mean, damn, Albuquerque, Denver, Cheyenne, Wichita, Oklahoma City, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, Little Rock, Jackson, New Orleans, Tampa, Miami, Orlando, Jacksonville, Charleston, Atlanta. You know, that's going to be a busy day. You know?
60 like, events in 63 days covering
all
48.
Okay, 63 days.
Yeah, there are a couple long drives in there we had to accommodate. But other than that, yeah, it's an event every day for 2 months straight, and I am super psyched about this. We had so much fun with the last tour. We learned so much. We met so many awesome people, and we are applying that to make another tour that is really going to have such a greater impact because we're planning ahead, and this is so important to what we do with live events. I've seen so many live events for Freedom, and I know what works, I know what doesn't, and what we have now with this incredible lead time and what we're creating here is a huge opportunity to wake people up.
You know, I'm from the experience of your last one, you probably got, you know, more of infrastructure built up, and you had this campfire kind of tour thing was kind of cool, but I'm telling you, that was grueling, man. And are you taking Baloo with you again?
No, we've got a dog sitter this time. The last tour was 120 events in 180 days. So instead of a little over 2 month tour, it was a 6 month tour. It was a lot slower. We were kind of planning as we went, and I was still on probation at the time. I had a GPS ankle bracelet on for the second half of the tour because they didn't like me traveling around without knowing exactly where I was. Like having a cell phone and public events every day wasn't enough. They had to actually track me, and so that was a big part of what made it harder to plan ahead for the last tour. But we have no such encumbrances at this point in time. In fact, one of the most exciting things about this tour is that it is an exploratory tour for Kokesh 2020, and what we are doing with this is gauging the support to see if there are enough people out there who would like to see the end of the entire federal government, which is the platform that I hope to be running on in 2020.
You know, being whether you can get on the, you know, as an anarchist kind of running forward and worried about ballot style, I don't give a crap. It's just you get a campaign going to somebody just like, yeah, Adam for not, but it's like Archie Bunker for whatever. I mean, you know, it's just that concept. You can get a, you know, they see some energy towards none of the above and, none your business. And it's a public opinion thing. It's just, it's its own meme. It's its own. I can understand if it takes off, that would be powerful. But I'm,
well, Ernie, yeah, let me, if I may jump right into addressing something very important for your audience, use the word anarchist. I don't describe myself as an anarchist just because it's not precise. If you give me a precise definition of anarchist in a certain way that means what I believe in, I can certainly say it might apply. I'm a voluntarist. And one of the problems with the freedom movement that I've seen is that a lot of people who are going through this beautiful awakening process where they first start challenging the authority of the state, they start living differently, and then they put it together philosophically and they go, wow, self-ownership, the non-aggression principle. And a lot of them look at politics and just, they'll do one cycle, or they supported Ron Paul or Rand Paul or Gary Johnson, and then they get frustrated and they leave and they come up with these, you know, emotional justifications for not participating in the system in any way. And I mean, you were at the Libertarian National Convention. You understand the potential. You understand what, like, Powell Gamel, as you described in your great memorial speech for him, by going out and telling people to not vote, was able to have an incredible impact by using the political process. And I think we do ourselves a great disservice. I think the powers that be would love nothing more than for everybody who's frustrated with the system to simply check out rather than pull more bodies out of the matrix and reach in and be active and engaged. And a lot of people who embrace this approach want to vote none of the above. Why do I want a president? I don't want a president. Why do I want a governor? I don't want a governor. I want to be free. I don't want to be governed or presided over. I'm a free human being. And oftentimes people will vote that. At the Libertarian National Convention, there was even a few votes cast for none of the above, as is mandated by party rules. None of the above must always be a ballot option. And I think it's time that instead of getting out with campaigns that are just protest campaigns or even messaging campaigns or educational campaigns, we actually get down in the weeds and say, look, let's figure out how do we actually bring about what would happen if enough people voted for none of the above. And what I'm proposing is that we can elect someone who's going to oversee an administrative process of dismantling an office, of dismantling, in this case, an entire layer of government. How we move forward by taking it apart from the top down is so essential. And I think there's been a lot of people who go, you know, well, we're going to have a paradigm shift, and we're going to wake everybody up, and then we're going to have a free society. And then there's a lot of steps missing in there. So I'm saying, hey, let's get down to the brass tacks. Let's see if we can build a consensus in America that the federal government should no longer exist and actually start dismantling it in a peaceful, orderly manner, doing it as deliberately as possible rather than waiting for some collapse and some upheaval and some great turmoil. If we're doing this because we care about people, we care about making change, I think it is essential for us to face these problems head on. And so that's what I'm doing with this campaign and with this tour.
You know, the revolution is between the ears. And doing the tour and this this concept that you're emphasizing, I don't see it being done. I see the infrastructure being laid and the revolution between the ears, but they're not going to embrace this until it collapses, and well, it's going right. to.
No, and I got to say, I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong about how this actually happens because I have a very clear vision. In fact, I can tell you right now, my vision is wrong to a certain degree. It's not precise. It's impossible to predict where this is going, how this thing is going to unravel. But even if I'm totally wrong, even if there's no place whatsoever for an administrative dismantling of the United States government, by putting forth a credible plan and drawing a line in the sand, what we're doing is creating a new way to reach people and pull them across that line. So this campaign is about ending the federal government by waking people up. It's not about even electing me. If I'm never elected, I would be happier if it turns out that way. I would be happier if the result of this campaign is that this is just my contribution to helping wake more people up and have more people withdraw their consent from the system. And I know with absolute certainty, as much as I know anything else, that what I'm doing with this and how we are going about organizing this campaign is the most effective thing that I can do to wake other people up and share this message.
You know, I'm to do what with it? I mean, this is it the youth, the young, it's junior high, it's high school, it's college, it's older people, it's party members. I mean, what's your demographic?
Everyone. It's everyone. The message of freedom is absolutely universal for the human condition. It's global.
You would hope. You know, we're seeing a lot of evidence of that. You know, when we come back, I want to talk to Adam about his experience at the national convention, because I didn't buy the full, I got the secret pass of the handshake. I know the sign to go see Adam speak, you know, so I didn't get to hear him speak like I haven't heard him before. But I want to know what he said. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com. That will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
When we come back and you do your speech and your impression, your party report thing, and then we'll kind of segue, because hopefully you've made some contacts there for your tour kind of deal.
Wait, what report?
Party on report? On the Libertarian Party Convention, your speech your presentation, what your gist of the whole thing was. You sitting in the middle of the debate and what, just give me a report, man. You were there.
Okay.
And then, who's going to be, is Brian and Alma going to hold down the fort for a couple months while you're gone? They're going to be able to do that?
That's the idea. That's what we've hired them for.
Yeah, so they cool?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Brian and Alma.
Yeah, you know, they'll, whatever. I'm just, I just know Alma kind of gets brave when somebody else's stuff and the man comes by. I mean, it's going to be interesting, with you gone on tour and the man there wanting to play. I don't know how that will work.
They haven't bothered us in like a month and a half now since the phone call with Mark Stevens. So the website says no violations on the property, the county website. So as far as I know, no violations. And they're on the record saying that no one in their department can prove jurisdiction. So as long as we don't, rub their noses in it anymore, I don't think they're gonna bother us. So we're not gonna do any, homesteading videos that are like, and here we are on this property building a house. Just kind of stay away from that liability until the house is done anyway.
All right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to go through the whole process with you on this, and you're not out too much. I mean, it's a lot of time and effort, but...
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
One of the featured speakers at the Libertarian National Convention in Orlando. I'm going to Disney World. Well, a lot of the kids did. Dad, yeah, you can go play Libertarian, whatever. And Mom's taking the kids too. And some people went on cruises afterwards or went to Disney World and kind of, vacation in peace. But during the convention, there was a lot of presentations, different things that I didn't sign up for. I'm just like, I don't care. I want to talk to people and go to the thing. And so the only thing I did want to go to was the C-SPAN televised presidential debate you know, and mm-hmm. that was entertainment. What did you think of that?
Oh, it was beautiful, and I was so glad to see that the party was able to organize such a positive event. And, you know, the candidates on stage really represented a beautiful spectrum
yep.
of libertarians, and it was so awesome to see that we had, you know, everyone from Gary Johnson, who is, you know, like someone who's sort of just starting their path towards libertarianism, looking at it from a simple, straightforward, honest, open-minded, practical perspective, to Austin Peterson, who is, you know, a little bit more paleocon, but, you know, a very fierce and active defender of his principles, to Dr. Feldman, who, you know, is not quite there philosophically, but is, like, extremely passionate and just really beautifully represented the spirit of the party. And then you had John McAfee, the software, you know, of McAfee Associates, antiviral, you know, tech genius, who, tech legend, really, who has been living libertarianism his entire life. He was my choice for the nomination. Someone who is, you know, a little new to the philosophy, but very familiar with standing up to authority. And yeah, I think he represented that very well. And then you have Daryl Perry, who really is, was the champion of the message and the true philosophy of freedom on that stage. And to see all of those candidates supporting each other, the differences were clear. Disagreements were respectful. They represented their causes and their ideas so well. They supported each other. There was like, I got to promote my guy, but, you know, John McAfee was there applauding for pretty much everyone's answer for, you know, every question. I was there in the front row next to his VP pick, my good friend Judd Weiss. You were right behind me. I had Jacob Lamont on the other side of me with LP Washington, and of course, right with me, my fiance Macy Tallman. It was an amazing night. It really just was a beautiful event, and I think a huge boon for the party and the message. Now, I think that the party choosing to go with Johnson strategically is not the strategy that I would have chose, but I am really excited that we had a vibrant process, that we have a candidate who's credible, who is has a great resume, and is going to provide a valuable gateway for people to wake up. And I know there are a lot of people who have been frustrated that, you know, we haven't had a philosophical libertarian nominee since 2004. And even then, Benarek was the first person I voted for president. Then, you know, you had Bob Barr and now Gary Johnson twice. But if anything, the party is getting more true to the message. There's the statement of principles being restored in recent years. People talking about the Bob Barr days as the dark days for the party. And I'm really looking forward to this. And, you know, if I may just say one more thing, and not so much about the party, but going back to what we were talking about before, one of the most beautiful things that I saw at the convention was Will Coley, vice presidential nominee, in the debate on Thursday night. The question was asked, what was your biggest mistake personally or politically? And I think he gave a different answer about the personal one. But his biggest political mistake, he said, was as a libertarian, as a voluntarist, checking out of the political process and not acknowledging its power as a means of reaching people, if nothing else. And he talked about all the interviews that he was able to do with leftists and conservatives and people of different political persuasions that he just never would have had a way of talking to if he didn't say, hey, I'm a vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Would you like to interview me? And taking on that platform and that mechanism of communicating with people in a way that they're already thinking about politics is so, so powerful. And there are a lot of people in our movement who resent political action. You know, there's a lot of good reason for that, because a lot of it is crap. A lot of it is a waste of time. And I, with my experience, you know, I figured out all the ways not to do this in my career. So it's sometimes it's frustrating for me to see people who care about freedom having their efforts misdirected or not be as effective or efficient as possible. But there's this huge opportunity that we miss, and we have to go for the low-hanging fruit. We have to go for the biggest bang for the buck. If we really care about bringing about a free society, we have to wake people up as fast as possible. And, you know, every day that the state continues is one more day of war and suffering, and every day that it ends sooner is one day less of that and one day more of peace and love and harmony for humanity. So taking advantage of this opportunity is so huge and so powerful. I just want to say that, like, I've always had, you know, an eye toward politics. I've been involved throughout my career as an activist. You know, I started with Iraq Veterans Against the War. I mean, you could go back to high school when I first registered as a libertarian. I was chair of the Libertarian Party of the Claremont Colleges in college in California, and volunteered for the California Convention back in, I don't even remember what year is it, early, like 2002 or 2003, something like that. Yeah, so then, you know, being involved with Ron Paul in 2008 and 2012, and, you know, supporting Gary Johnson in 2012. So, you know, I'm really excited that the movement is sort of working through these issues, I think. There's a lot of frustration, rightly so. There's a lot of anger and disgust, and very rightly so. A lot of confusion and frustration.
We had Angela Keaton on a previous hour, and off air, I was telling her some of the, you know, little behind the scenes stuff of people that come and go, and we've been doing this for decades. And I tell you, I saw a resurrection of the old hardcore Rothbard kind of leave me aloneist, you know, me trying to do whatever I was doing in the 2000s and so on. And mm-hmm. and it had the impact, and you saw it there with the Daryl Perry campaign. And the support that he had, you know, was a resurrection of this concept of what the original intent for the Libertarian Party was. And as much as they tried to, yeah, but we got to be a part, got elected, got to compromise, get, you know, vote totals of the party and supporting the party, and, well, it's going on about the party going, God, you guys don't get it, man. The party is a tool that was used. The whole concept was to free minds. You know, how many minds can you free? Well, they're starting to see that and embrace it. Finally.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? This now voices can be heard. Just want to speak louder.
American way. You know, that's one thing that Adam Kokesh is on talking with us about, his Love of Freedom tour. You know, the American way, you've been across your campfire tour when you first did Freedom the Book. And now, of course, you got, you know, through your fourth printing of them. And I'm wondering, as you do this trip, I'd like to continue a conversation with you every so often. I know you're really busy, but I'm wanting to see the evolution of the country. You know, the people that come, the questions that are, you know, brought, the atmosphere that you're going to be entering into compared to when you did this before. What's your feeling after going to Orlando? What do you think's going on?
Well, I'm glad that you put it in those terms, and I'm not sure if I can, you know, really comment on a change from one tour to the next, because this tour is going to be so much different from the last. The last tour was really talking to our people. We didn't really promote it to a more general public audience, but we are now, because right now we're getting all the hardcore people on board 3 months in advance instead of like a week in advance or a month in advance. And, you know, it's 5 months from now till the last events in the tour. We're really going to be able to change the way that we are using these events to reach new audiences and wake more people up. And follow up with what we were, to connect this to what we were talking about before with what's happening in the party and in the movement, I think it's so cool right now to have this amazing sense, and I I wish there was a better way I could share this with people. I wish I could take my 8 years of activism and just download it into somebody else's brain and give them, you know, all of the experience and everything I've learned from all of this. But one of the luxuries that people like you and I have of having been around for as long as we have, and obviously you're on a different scale than me, Grandpa, but we've got, you know, you get, it doesn't take long. You really don't have to be in that move, in this movement and paying attention for all that long to have a strong sense of the evolution, the paradigm shift, the convergence that is happening right now. And I'll tell you in a way that's really easy for people to understand. You know, we joke, what's the difference between a statist and a libertarian? About 6 months, right? You know, and it's accelerating now. People are waking up faster. I mean, I get emails from people who say, Adam, I watched your YouTube channel, binge watched for this last week, and I get it. I'm in your head. I got the whole perspective now. It makes sense. And you can see that there's this process people go through, and I've met so many people. I'm sitting in my RV trailer right now, surrounded by signatures from the last tour and beautiful positive affirmations. And having met all these people, when I travel, I like to ask people, how did you wake up? How did you become a libertarian? And I think I have pretty close to or near the best body of anecdotal data about this. And we see how people wake up as a process, you know, that it starts with anger, frustration, or one issue that catches your mind, gets you to start questioning things. And then there's a general progression of like, well, gee, the state's just, the government is this, wow, it's really destructive. We got to have a lot less of it, you know, and that's the first step. But then you start to realize, wait a second, it's a cancer. We can't cut out 90% of a cancer and think that we're going to be healthy when it grows back. And you get to a deeper philosophical understanding. And there's an emotional process, too. You know, I tortured people in Fallujah when I was in the Marine Corps. And for me to accept the message of freedom, to accept that government is invalid and unethical, I had to go through a process where I processed all of that for myself. I had to change my view of myself. I had to humble myself to accept my participation in statism at the most brutal level and to admit that I was wrong. I went through that with my anti-war activism. A lot of people go through that in the course of waking up to the message of freedom itself. And what we see is not just a beautiful process, you know, kind of like mourning, you know, the five stages of mourning. You see a lot of people in the process of waking up to libertarianism, to the message of freedom, going through a similar process. And a lot of people go to that anger phase or that just checked out phase where it's like, oh, I'm not going to participate. I'm just going to grow my vegetables and raise my chicken, you know, and I'm going to ignore all of that. And it's so much better when you get past that. But to get back to your original question, you can start to see, and I think I'd like to get your take on this, Ernie, but that process that we see among individuals, we see now in the country as a whole. We see people going, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, you know, holy crap, that's a good thing. Like, that's beautiful to see that people are looking for something radically different. And I think it's time. We are poised. And I think my campaign, I think this tour, we're going to be doing tours like this every year if they keep being this successful. I think this is how I position myself. And I'd like to have as many people join me as possible because I think I'm creating a great opportunity to be efficient. But what I've always told people is do what you find is most effective for you waking people up because that's what you're going to find the most satisfying.
You know, it's a tapestry of just, I keep emphasizing this, and as time goes on, and that's why I was disappointed, you know, Powell died, is because he and I have worked very closely on this for over a decade on doing exactly what I saw manifestations of, and I wanted to share it with him, and it was sad for me, because I'm going, hey, Powell, it's taken, man. It's taken hold. Because our whole goal was never about electoral success. It was just opinion. You know, when that's a side effect of just everybody has the opinion that, you know what, we have an approval rating of the Congress and the media tied at like 4%. I mean, so I'm going, we win. I mean, that's all it takes. Now, of course, you got the infrastructure of we're going to kick your ass and tax you while doing it. And I'm going, but that is, that's just the desperation. That's the last vestiges of a corrupt and dismantling of itself, society or an empire. And I see American society, and that's why I wanted to, you know, kind of stay in touch with you as you go on this tour, is because, yeah, I know it's a little different. I know you're doing, you know, different emphasis of blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're traveling the country. You're going to every state. You're making stops almost every day. You're talking to people, and they are going to be talking back. You're going to be saying your thing, and they're going to be expressing to you. And if you're lucky, you'll get, you know, traveling protesters or something. You know, you haven't made it until you got traveling protesters. So this is
Hold on. I have spooks that travel and follow me. I don't need protesters.
Yeah.
Only them too.
Well, you know, the one thing, it kind of, you know, once you got engaged and so on, you and Macy became a couple, you know, that was the kind of had to change your audience a little bit, because, you know, they had the groupies, you know, that were, you know, Adam Kokesh following. I'm wondering, you know, they got more serious, or they're like, yeah, Macy's cute too. We can, you know, we'll go visit with her too. So I'm just, the team is changed the dynamic, I think. You know, what about that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think looking forward like that to, you know, having a relationship in your life, and living by these values and what we're doing now in homesteading really changes things. And this is so important. Like I said about the campaign earlier, it's not about winning electoral victory. It's really about drawing a line in the sand and pulling people across it to withdraw their consent. And part of withdrawing that consent is living by these values and having a long-term vision of how you're going to live.
It's a culture thing. It's always a public opinion thing. And I keep, every time I see that rear its head or have the most influence and kind of the long term for sure staying generation next guy, I just keep emphasizing him because I know it to be true. Kokesh and Macy are just a manifestation of that very thing.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. God, I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come.
You know, this attitude, the peace train is coming, it's going, it's doing. Is that something you're going to get on, Adam? Is that, you know, the peace, is that, you know, we were talking to Angela Keaton from Antiwar.com in the last hour, and it's just, you know, where the hell is the peace movement? It's always individuals. It's always the libertarians. It's always a consistent, you know, as long as the wars, you know, being for or against is serving they, them, those well, and them getting approved of more money for baby bottle factories or bomb factories or something. It's always an issue, but it always seems like it's not used in any way to make people better. You know, it's not, you know, if we're going to have a war, it's just how it's going to be waged and against whom. And I'm going, you know, this last tour that you did, was the war issue prominent at all?
I think when we did this last tour, like I said, it was more about speaking to our people. And I already know that when you wake up to the message of freedom, it's because you're trying to honestly figure out what is best for humanity. And you can't help but be anti-war with that attitude. In fact, the real anti-war movement is the freedom movement. It's not the lefties, and I hate to demean them because I don't mean to. They are awesome, beautiful, caring, and engaged people. But I think it is undeniable what recent history has shown with the anti-war movement, that it was an anti-Bush movement, not a true anti-war movement. It wasn't an anti-militarism movement. Now, there are a lot of great people, especially in Iraq's Veterans Against the War, where I got my start in activism, and especially in Veterans for Peace, of people who have been anti-war activists for a long time, who have stayed in fighting against militarism. And they are motivated by a beautiful, deeper set of values. And I think we share that very much in common with those genuine anti-war activists in the anti-war movement who really stuck around, who really who didn't totally sell out to Obama, who didn't say essentially, oh, you're going to give me free health care? Well, then it's okay if you keep killing people in the Middle East. You know, I mean, that's crazy, but that's really what it came down to from the actions of a lot of people, what they were, you know, what their true attitude was. And what we're talking about now is giving people who are looking for those deeper values a way to put them together in a comprehensive worldview. And one of the things about this campaign that we're starting with the exploratory mode now for COCUS 2020, at least, is organizing based on those values as well. And if you go to the forums on our website, if you just go to thefreedomline.com, you can't miss it. There's a forums button near the top.
Thefreedomline.com. Gotta get the in there.
Ernie.
Thefreedomline.com.
Exactly. And it's just, it's amazing to see how many people are stepping up to be a part of this. And just by putting your name on the list to say, I believe the federal government should no longer exist, how that, you know, relates to anti-war activism, oh my gosh. How many people around the world do you think want to see the end of the American empire? But if you just take that out, how much less war in the world? When you understand how much is funded behind the scenes by the American federal government, you can't, like, even if you really believe that a national defense is somehow making us safer, it's not actually. It makes us less safer. I think absolutely in practice, in theory, entirely impossible for it to be in some way serving to make people safer. But now it's really clear. I mean, even if you believed it was necessary, starting from scratch would be better than what we have now. What we have now is so cancerous, poisonous, destructive, corrupting of so many things throughout the world, causing so much hate and discontent and division and human suffering that is visited back upon us. That is the CIA's concept of blowback, that people don't like the American military government meddling in their affairs. It causes resentment, and when you kill their family members,
no, this is known. This is but there's another. There's a big, giant goal mission of they, them, those, that kind of, I mean, this is, for the first time, you know, being older, I remember, you know, us having the same opinion. You know a little bit about something, you got to contact, you do some research, you're running a campaign, and you're just going, they're just lying. And now the lies are being more exposed. And with that information comes a philosophy that anyone can check and share and social media. So then they got to get control of social media. And they can't change humans, you know, just our predisposition, just be left alone. So they got to change that. You know, they got, you know, with food, water, air, or whatever, turn us into zombie apocalypse of because they can. And I'm just, and it's with the, you know, health and nutrition and food and government schools. I mean, we are bombarded. But fortunately, with, you know, efforts like yours, you know, the Freedom Book and your tours and, you know, the example that you set, and there's many other great people setting examples, that's what changes it. That it's culture, 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 opinion, opinion, opinion. And everybody wants to do it some voting thing, or it's a next guy of what sign I put in my front yard. And I'm like, oh, God, man, just stop. And Pal and I were, you know, so locked together on this concept that I'm really starting to see the manifestation of just Generation Next influence. And that's what I was disappointed I didn't get to share. But he knew. I mean, we constantly knew. We could see it. I just, inside the party and with a lot of efforts such as yours and some of the, you know, young, you know, Libertarian Youth Caucus and all that kind of stuff. But, of course, they, you know, had to go get a pack and a FEC filing of a 501 kind of, whoa. Where'd you guys get the idea to fill out paperwork? Where'd that come from? You know, and you're doing it too. I'm just going, all right, you know, guys want to fill out paperwork, you know, but explain to me the benefits of some paperwork.
The benefits of some paperwork?
Yeah, I mean, you got a 501 of whatever the heck, and I'm like, wow, sounds like paperwork.
Yeah, and I'm very fortunate to be supported by people who do the paperwork for me, because despite being very good at filling out forms from having been in the military, I can't stand it now. But what we have done with this that's so important is created a way for people to pay less taxes. And if doing a little pay, like, I'm not afraid of this. I'm not afraid of exploring the, you know, ways that you stand up to authority. You know, you can't just pretend that the police aren't there and not learn how to interact with them. Same thing with government as a whole. Learning how to interact with it in a way that increases freedom is so important. And this is why, again, with the campaign, you know, I don't know how this is going to end out. I don't know if the dollar collapses before we build the consensus that the federal government should end, it's going to look a lot different than if in 2020 we actually win this and I get to walk into the White House and sign a pile of executive orders, or just one executive order that says, all right, no more authority here. Let's start taking it apart like this. And just being able to build that consensus today, I think it's not a, like, you're so right when you say that it's not about the paperwork, it's about the paradigm. But if you can interact with people that increases in a way that increases your freedom, that increases their freedom, that provides mechanisms for changing the paradigm at the same time, I think it's a no-lose situation. I think what we've created with this campaign, and, you know, I've talked to you about this a lot. I've gotten a lot of input from you and a lot of people with more experience and who are wiser than you in the movement. What we've come up with is an incredible way to wake people up. So please, thefreedomline.com, we're funding this tour.
TheFreedomLine.com. You know, it's like I always go, you know, freedom's with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. You got to tell them the freedom, because they don't know. They go, I went to free, I can't find it. I go, no, it's TheFreedomLine.com.
TheFreedomLine.com.
All right. Well, and they're going to get the information there, and they'll get on, you know, these stops that you have scheduled. You know, people go, hey, I live in that city. You know, do you already got it filled up, or you're counting on people to volunteer their abilities to get you a crowd?
We want all the help we can get. We want to blow this up. We want to wake as many people up as possible.
All right.
Sign up. Go to the forums. Go look at our event pages. Invite your friends on Facebook.
Facebook! Oh, my God! We're starting to see stories. Social media use is starting to plummet. Well, not until Adam gets to use it.
The Free State Project has reached its goal.
All right, there we go. All right, thanks, man. Is that good for you? Is that what you needed?
Yeah, that was awesome. I appreciate it. And we should sit down off the record, if you don't mind. Next time we're co-located, I'd like to sit down with you for 30 minutes to discuss some behind-the-scenes strategy wheels that we've set in motion.
All right. You know, we can do it. You know, whenever it gets too hot and you want showers.
Yeah, no, we have showers out here. We love it up here. If it's too hot, the last thing we're doing is going to the valley. If it gets too hot, you come up here.
Yeah, no, that's hip. You know, it's just finally the pool water, because we got so much shade, it finally got above 80 to where it could be comfortable to go swimming. But it's still refreshingly cool. So whenever you guys want to come down, hang, take a break, man. Peace.
All right. Peace.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it.
I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence, and we're going to Ukraine, Odessa, Odessa, Odessa via technology. We have, who's going to be participating? You know, people that we've met before, been here in Phoenix, Arizona, Hayden State, Jacek Spindel, you know, from Poland, he's there. Vlad Tuleshenko, I know I'm butchering all of these. You know, Lee Skulin and Ken Skulin from ISIL, International Society for Individual Liberty. We have Glenn Kripe from Language of Liberty is going to be there, which means that Tone Vase is there from Bitcoin. He's we're using his computer for the hookup here. Misha, you know, Lavrovsky, she's coming, and Yasolov. I mean, it goes Matthew Krasbort. I mean, there's a lot of skis and lovas here, man. I mean, you know, there's something going on. You know, who do I got first? Tone, is that you?
Yeah, I'm on. But we're all in the room. Everyone's using a speaker, so we're going to talk one at a time.
That's working pretty good. All right, we'll do that. We'll do that. Well, Tone, let me go to you first. I mean, you went to the Marrakesh event. I want to hear about that. You're traveling around, got to do your presentation. You're in Odessa. What's up? Tell me what's going on, man.
It was great. It was very different. That was my first Muslim country. It was in Marrakesh. I had no intention to come to Ukraine. I didn't know about this event. I ran into Glenn. We sat at the same table on opening night dinner, and we're looking at each other trying to figure out where we've met. And then we figured it out that it was at your house when I was staying there for a few days, and he came in for an interview. So that's me and Glenn connected, and he told me about Ukraine. I changed my travel plans and came here, did my Bitcoin presentation at both events. It's developing nations. They really need to at least understand what Bitcoin is. Both countries have a bit of an internet issue, so digital currency that only relies on the internet is probably a few years away, but it's good that they know about it. We have a lot of people. I don't want to take up too much time.
Well, I'm you know, it's one thing,
Glenn, but I had a great time.
Well, you know, that's what Glenn, you know, tell me, you know, the Bitcoin thing is going, it's almost $600 now, man. I mean, what the hell? And that's one thing we had about a year ago. You had a thing in, where was it? It was in Ukraine, so Kiev. And we talked to some guys there, and I'm like, yeah, you guys got some money problems. You need to know about this Bitcoin thing. What the hell? You know, so has that been a popular presentation by Tone, you think?
Hi, Ernie. Yes. Everybody really liked it. They had a lot of questions. They had a long discussion. And you're right. This is our third time in Ukraine, our third Liberty Camp in Ukraine. It seems great to have time to join us.
You know, I'm glad that you know, tell me the flavor. We just came from the Libertarian National Convention, and from the inside, I John McAfee, I had him on the Friday before, and he made me go, and I'm glad I did. And it was, we had the opportunity. I know I was, that weekend was be in Marrakesh then, but we made the opportunity because we had a death in the family, it changed plans and all this other stuff. But, you know, we got to go to the convention. I tell you, I saw a sea change. There's been the resurrection of the leave me aloneist, you know, freedom's answer, what's a freaking question kind of thing has permeated Generation Next. And I'm wondering how it's going in the Middle East and Europe. You're on the front lines there. What's happening? Are you seeing a change in Europe?
Well, I would just make a short comment, and I think our young friends from Ukraine and Georgia Republic would be able to give you a better answer. My impression is that young people here are divided between, and I'm saying divided within themselves. Part of them wants to be left alone,
And part of them wants to take advantage of an opportunity to reform Ukraine. The country is in a state of change. It's an opportunity to change the constitution, to change the system, and they need to decide what kind of country they want. They have a very rare opportunity here.
Well, hell, they just need to know that, you know, to change the what. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's one thing I want to ask. Is Ken Schoolin sitting there?
He is. Here's Ken.
Ken! Ken! Oh, this worldwide, you know, international leave-me-alone-ist mentality that's going on. Are you feeling a change? Is it happening?
Oh, it's fantastic here, and we're really sorry that you couldn't make it. We were hoping to have you in Marrakesh and even here in Ukraine, too. But, you know, we found one shortcoming with the Bitcoin while we were here. We had two teams giving presentations on starting entrepreneurial projects here. We were trying to decide, well, let's flip a coin to see who goes first. And we broke three laptops trying to flip a Bitcoin.
You know, this is, is Bitcoin hitting their mindset? Are they starting to see the philosophy behind blockchain technology and the philosophy behind a borderless currency that isn't tied to a country or an empire? So, I mean, that concept, just even that, is such a beginning for so many other things. And I'm just wondering if the generation next is open to it. Is it starting to segue into other aspects of their life and government and so on? I'm wondering how awake people are. And you're dealing, ISIL, you know, doesn't necessarily focus on the youth, but I think that's where the change is. Is that starting to be incorporated in a lot of your activities as the young people?
Absolutely. But I think the thing monumental for us was Tom's explanation. I've never heard a clearer, more detailed explanation that everybody could grasp. And instantly he got us started on it. He helped me open up a Bitcoin wallet and explained all the ways that there are tremendous advantages over fiat money. And so I'm in charge up, and I can see a number of students have really seen a lot of the possibilities in Bitcoin.
Yeah, no. It's a powerful tool, and we're probably going to reconnect when we get into the break. It's chopping up a little bit. Make sure you guys get up next to the microphone when you're talking. Well, I want to talk to some of our other friends there. Is Jacek there?
Yeah, here's Jacek.
Hi, Aaron.
Hello. Are you? Well, when are you guys coming back to Arizona IA, man?
Coming back in October. I can't wait it.
Okay, Arizona. October's better than July. But
it is.
You know, well, we got a pool, man. That makes it tolerable. All of a sudden, your core gets down in temperature and you have a good time. But yeah, it's 115, 18 crap. And I'm going, yeah, but it's a dry heat, like an oven. So this is right now in Ukraine. What are the opportunities for you guys there? I mean, aren't you from Poland?
Yes, actually, I came here with a larger group by car. It's kind of a road trip, and we stopped on the way at this amazing event done by Vlad and Glenn, and it's been going great. We have amazing, you know, exchanges here. We talk about Bitcoin. We talk about successful reforms in New Zealand, Estonia. We talk about entrepreneurship. So, you know, I'm kind of like trying with the batteries again, and ready to go for cities. We go next to Moldova, Chisinau, then Romania, Hungary, Slovakia, and back to Poland. It's kind of like a mixture of libertarian activity with tourism.
All right, we're going into the first break. Hey, man, we got quite a few. When we come back, we'll go to Vlad. You know, and he was kind of, you know, hosting this or putting it on. And so I'm wanting to know what the locals were. We'll get a better connection here because I want to make, you know, we're making you out, but it's chopping up a little bit. So we'll go ahead and reconnect. But I tell you this, you know, there is a world, and that was our last, most recent edition of the Freedom's Phoenix newspaper, we included articles by a lot of the guys. Oh, you gotta read it.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now, there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
All right, try that.
Yeah, how's this? I'm going to try video as well. I'm using my own personal connection.
All right.
I'll check that later.
Well, this is, I mean, it sounds a lot better now. I don't want to take through. I got a lot of pictures of all you guys, so.
No, I'm gonna test video. I need to test it.
All right.
You know what? I don't need to be charging this. How's this?
Well, I'm seeing some video. I'm more concerned. Well, you got a lot of light in the background, so everybody's dark. All right. Yeah. Okay.
How? What if we change seats?
Yeah. Just, you know, have the wall as your background, not the window.
Okay. How's this?
There you go.
So what I need actually is I'm gonna do this.
Yeah. Bring your camera down a little bit. I'm getting tops of heads.
Yep.
Ernie, I just want to clarify one thing. The Marrakesh conference wasn't our Liberty International. It was done by my wife's TFT events and the Arab Center in Marrakesh. They were the ones that really were the organizers for this.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and, you know, clarify that when we come in. We're coming in about 15 seconds. We good? Okay, I'm going to come back with Vlad, all right?
Okay, I'll just turn it to the person speaking.
There you go. We'll do that. All right, we're back in 10 seconds.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Stop me, cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
And several other laws given the opportunity. Okay. Odessa, Ukraine, right in the middle of, I don't know, whatever the hell is going on in Ukraine. Let's talk to Vlad Toroshenko. You know, let's go ahead and, now Vlad, you put on this event. Tell me, did you have a lot of support from the locals there or resistance, or how well was it attended? How'd it go, man?
Good morning, Ernie. I hope that I'm right with the timing. And, yeah, really thank you for organizing this option to talk on your radio show. And it seems like going pretty well. 4 months ago when I was to Phoenix, I got an idea with Glenn to organize the next camp, like here in Odessa. And that time it was just a planning, we were discussing, and here's the final result. And that's nice again to talk to you again. You know, before we had a camp, and right now you could check it out, you could again kind of promote us for the future. And we are having a pretty big camp, actually the biggest one from three of them which organized. We have like 33 participants and 18 speakers we have this time, which is very impressive. And we have a very big amount of people from different countries actually coming to us. It's Ukrainians, Polish, Czech, Georgians, Armenian, Azerbaijanians, and of course Americans and United Kingdom.
Well, how supportive are people of you doing this? Is the local government out of them just crazy libertarians? Are they seeing you as a threat? Are you running for president yet? I mean, I got 15 gazillion questions here. I mean, you know, we had Vlad on before. Let me tell you a little story. You know, Vlad comes on, man. He's like Oh, let me tell you how to do this politician thing, man. And I'm party, you know. We're going to have us an event, and we're going to, you know, demonstrate the Generation Next support of freedom. And kind of, so I'm just wondering, Vlad, how's the plan, man? How's things going for you for the future there in Generation Next? They loving on you a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we have also, for example, I could give you a real example. I have two participants of my first camp who are nowadays representing Students for Liberty Ukraine, the Misha and Yaroslav. Maybe they'll talk a bit later again, with UN represents himself. But that's a hope, actually, you know, like from the first camp, it's just 1.5 years, and right now they're so active and organizing their own events around Ukraine. So it's, you know, the camp which we have, I guess it's a good seat to bring new leaders and...
new leaders for what? I mean, what's the attitude there? We have a big change in, you know, in Alchquitit and Russia and the U.S. and Crimea, and we're going to, you know, blah, 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 blah. What's the vehicle that you have for getting freedom-oriented philosophy into the mix? Is that happening? Is that possible? Are people supportive of that? Are you, you know, just not even heard? I'm wondering what kind of impact you're having on this tumultuous time that's going on in Ukraine right now.
If you remember, like, the last time when I had a talk with you, I said, like, it's difficult in my country already to change the mentality of the old people who grew up in the Soviet system. But the young generation are very open for newer way of thinking, let's say, and which is, for example, libertarian societies like producing or giving for us, for, I don't know, the people from the Eastern Europe, is pretty much interesting. And the students are involved nowadays, like in Ukraine, for example, organizing some events, for example, for covering the issue with both sides, for example, with Ukraine and Russia, like to find some solutions how to stop the war and the issue we have with politics between us, but we still like the human beings, and we shouldn't hate each other so much just because of the politics. We just need to find the people.
But what is the overlap, Vlad?
Here in Ukraine and the people from another side in Russia, if they will be active, for example, then we could get a result, and that will be...
Well, tell me, Vlad, what's the main issue that brings out the youth? I mean, I remember when the Libertarian Party first started and everything, it was in direct reaction to policies of the U.S. government and the Nixon administration, and like, we're done. So I'm wondering, and anti-war, of course, the Vietnam War and so on was a big motivation. So I'm wondering, in Ukraine, what's bringing them out to see you? Is it just, I mean, is it something, is it taxes, is it property right, war, leave me aloneism, economy? I mean, what are, just give me the top two main issues.
The main issues in current Ukraine is, of course, the economical situation. Like, you know, a lot of students are, and let's say the normal citizen, like right now, have a big problem with getting a job. And like, even if you have a job, you have a very financial situation. So, because our last, like in the past, our market was just working with, for example, with Russia, and right now, since we don't have any business contact, or our like economy is not working already in the same way how it was for the last 20 years, we kind of in the position which is like pretty low, and like we are
well, that
more
brings worse, opportunities, worse, man. Opportunities,
but that we are kind of far away from it. But step by step, the network of the people in Ukraine are who are having the connection with some people in Europe, for example, or abroad, for making a partnership or business together, is getting better. And exactly it's happening when we organize such kind of events, when the foreigners are coming, and as well some leaders from the foreign countries.
Well, I can see it in the meeting that you got right there right now. You know, one thing real quick I wanted to clear up something is Lee there, Lee Schoolin?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Lee, go ahead. You know, and I didn't want to, you know, I wanted to make sure that you got, Ken wanted to make sure that your event that you got in Morocco, in Marrakesh, is, you know, was the product of your efforts along with some Muslim organization. Can you tell me about the structure of what you did and how successful it was and how that segues to you being in Odessa?
Yes, last year I organized a conference in Bali, Indonesia. That was a Muslim country. So that was my first time to organize Austrian School Economics conference in a Muslim country. So last year I decided to get into more of the center of the Muslim country, so MENA region. So I came up with Nuwat from the Arabic Center in Morocco. We chose the place of Marrakesh. It's a very popular tourist attraction. So we organized the conference, but it was a little difficult because they want me to take away all the sensitive words such as liberty, freedom,
We're going to go ahead and take this conversation in the break. I want to go ahead and have her go. We'll be right back.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're in break now, but I didn't want to chop it up. It's still in the archive. Go ahead and explain that real quick. There were some sensitive words that they wanted, you know, extracted from your literature or something. What?
Oh, from the speaker's speaking topic. Like extreme, because when I invited all the speakers and I asked them to give me their topics, mostly my speakers all have been lying with free market, freedom, liberty, libertarian. Then they said, no, we cannot have any of these words. We only can have peace and entrepreneurship. So it was quite difficult. So we have to disguise our message. That's what my impression was. But when we got there, I was very surprised how many of their local speakers, the MENA region speakers, their Islamic scholars, they talked more about freedom and libertarianism than us, because I warn everybody, don't talk about those sensitive words, but they did. So, did you have the same impression, Tom?
I didn't know the rules. my presentation had the word Bitcoin in it, and I didn't know any of those rules. So in my presentation, I probably said a couple of things because I didn't know I wasn't supposed to say them. But I'm not. I made it out of the country, so I'm okay.
Yeah, weren't supposed to say them
when I promoted all the speakers I invited, I especially just focus on what they do as an entrepreneur, as a Bitcoin person, as a banker, as a whatever. So finally, they accept most of my speakers and eliminated some of them. And they even told David Freeman not to talk about what he proposed to talk about. So
How was it accepted by the audience? Were the people like, yeah, man, I got some meat. You know, I didn't feel like I got censored. I got some new stuff. Oh, my God. And the Hellfire missile didn't descend on us. And there weren't protesters out front. And we rule. Freedom rocks. I mean, did it come out being they got fed?
I was new to that scene. So let me kind of answer that. My impression was that the audience, they're not used to these kinds of lectures in general. So even though people watered it down, and some of the other speakers weren't allowed to speak, even the watered down version still might have been a little too much for that audience. So it really did not have an effect like you think it did, because they're very new to these ideas.
Ernie, you would have been the real test. If they had been able to hear you, they would have been probably already gone into revolution.
I didn't have to make it out of Marrakesh because I wasn't there, but I probably would have needed. We had some friends that were there right after the event. They're doing the, they rented like 20 something vehicles to participate in some Sahara Desert rally thing they wanted me to go to. And I'm like, yeah, let me be all libertarian, go there in a Muslim country out in the desert. And I bet not. maybe not. Well, all right, we're back in 10 seconds, and we'll go ahead and, you know, we'll go through, who wants to introduce a lot of these people? We got Misha and Yaroslav and Matthew and Christina. You know, who wants to walk me through that?
Let's have Vlad introduce his friends and colleagues in the European and Ukrainian and Georgian students for Liberty.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, well, I see a whole lot of people dying, don't they need to point the crooked little fingers at everybody else? Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat. Get over it.
Read them good. Get them in bad, 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 bad. All right. Well, what we want to do is we want to get introduction to some of the people and what their participation in the, I guess we can call it a freedom movement. I'm not sure. Vlad, what, you know, introduce us to some of the people, but, you know, go ahead and when you introduce them, kind of give me an idea of what they represent and why they're there and you know, give us a little bio, would you please?
Yeah, definitely. So here with us today, we have three representatives of Students for Liberty as well. Two of them are my colleagues from Lesotho, Ukraine, and they are actually as well helped me with organizing the camp, with promotion, with finding participants and another movement in the organizing process. And they're also the founders of Liberty Classes. That's a kind of interesting project which they are kind of presenting for students in different universities here in Ukraine. But they'll tell about this by themselves, I guess, already. And as well, by chance, we have Mariam Gogolashvili from Georgia, Students for Liberty. And she right now is having a tour around the Ukraine when she's representing the program or the presentation on the Dragon Wars, and which is like had a kind of a bad experience for being Georgian. She's trying to break the this, you know, the issue on the Dragon Wars, and as well, I'm sure that she could add more than me. So I would give the word to the guys, and yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and go. And what's her name? From Georgia?
Hello, it's Mariam. I'm from Georgia, and as Vlad said, I'm touring around Ukraine to share my experience when it comes to drug war. Because in Georgia, drug laws are very oppressive, and Georgian drug policy is extremely repressive. And thanks to Students for Liberty, our movement is very fastly growing. And we see thousands of people joining our movement and being united against drug war in Georgia.
Okay, now let me go ahead and ask you, you know, in this bringing out actual support, I mean, bodies, people coming and supporting your position on this, you're getting a lot of your rhetoric, I mean, your conversation, the verbiage that you're using, the language, what you're saying, is this organic? Did it come from your own experiences? Are you drawing from experiences of other countries or America rhetoric? You're reading, you know, American, you're like Language of Liberty, Glenn Kripes stuff. I mean, where are you getting your material to convince people that you're right?
It's not. It was not easy to convince people in Georgia that drug war had to end, because when we started this movement 5 years ago, we were called junkies and we were mocked and marginalized because of starting talking about these ideas which were taboo in Georgian society. But when people have saw that this is a huge threat for their liberty and for their freedom, when they saw their friends and relatives stand in jail because of just using drugs, then it became pretty easy to convince them that they have to fight for their rights and for those, for their children's or friends' rights. And like recently, on 2nd of June, we had up to 5,000 people gathering in front of state chancellery demanding for the criminalization of drug use. And when it comes to the process of liberalization of the drug policy, we use different countries' experiences, but of course we are more oriented to taking consideration the current situation in Georgia. And when I share my experience in Ukraine, of course I taking consideration that this is different context and they have different problems, but still we can always share our experiences and be useful for each other.
You know, it's just, it's everything that I've been, you know, I'm 55, born in 61, graduated high school 79, so I'm an older guy, but I was you guys. I mean, you know, back in the late 80s and so on, I'm in my 20s getting aware of what, and I can see what happened. It's a change in opinion. The culture, the, you know, just people living through the drug war and just the understanding, they become much more supportive of the freedom aspect of this. And I can see that the youth there, you guys, that's why I was so supportive of Glenn Kripe's Language of Liberty project, is because you guys, you know, are just the generation next that's coming up with this understanding. Do they see you as a threat? I mean, are there threats of arrest? Is there pressure? The men in black coming to visit you and say hello?
I think in Georgia we managed to convince officials and the society as well that we are not a threat to them, and we should not be, and our friends should not be punished because of their recreational use of drugs. And the process is going pretty well in Georgia, and I hope the same in for Ukraine as well, because drug policy is pretty oppressive in Ukraine as well. So I really do hope the rising movement for ending the war on drugs in Ukraine as
well. Yeah, because it's a freedom thing. All right, the young men next to you, pick one. Let's find out who you are. And you win.
Yeah, so my name is Yaroslav. So my name is Yaroslav. I'm studying in Kyiv right now. But originally I'm from Crimea, and all that stuff happened there 2 years ago, and perhaps that was the thing that motivated me to speak a little bit about new and alternative views and ideas on politics and philosophy, because I was not okay with what was happening around me. So right now I'm working with European Students for Liberty as a local coordinator. I'm working on a Liberty Classes project, which is a series of educational lectures.
Why? How did you find Students for Liberty on what? They dropped a flyer on your front door or something? I mean, how'd you even know they existed?
Well, it was by accident. I just found an information on some website that I can go for free to Germany for a week. And it was a seminar organized by Institute for European Studies. And there was a presentation about ESFL and SFL in general. And I really got involved and interested in those ideas.
Why? What idea? What was the hook? What, you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. They didn't tell me this in, you know, Crimean school, man. I went to the, you know, pledge of whatever, and they didn't say nothing about this. So what was it that sparked your interest?
It was probably one of the books by Ayn Rand. in one of her essays. Because before going to that seminar, we received a list of readings to prepare ourselves. And I was reading an essay, I believe it was so-called Man's Rights. And it was, I thought that something like, I always thought about that, but no one really told me, and I was feeling a bit crazy about my thoughts. So perhaps that was it, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, see, there was a book. It was called It Usually Begins with Ayn Rand. But, you know, and I understand. I started from a different, but then it's required reading by everybody. You get involved. It's exciting for me. We're going into break. When we come back, we'll get to the other people. But I'm telling you, you know, the excitement of seeing it happen, Generation Next, you can feel it. Okay, Tone.
About like 10 minutes before the show starts. Hey, Ernie.
Yeah. What's up?
Hey, can you save me like 2 minutes at the end? Because I want to promote Ukraine. I love how cheap it is here. I mean, this is like one of my new vacation spots.
All right, we'll get to that. I want to make sure we at least touch on everybody that was expecting to speak.
Yeah, just give me 1 minute to promote Ukraine at the very end.
All right, well, we can go long and do whatever we want. But, you know,
don't you have another guest after this?
No, it's the third hour.
Oh, it is the third hour? Oh,
there. Yeah, we can go until you're boring.
Who do you want to go to next? You want to?
Well, I don't know. I got a list here. Let's see. Okay. Did we get to Christina Araklova? Is she? That was who we just talked to, right?
No, she's not here.
Okay, so she's not here. Okay, so we got
Christina's not here.
And then see Matthew. Did we get him?
No, not yet. Matthew's here, but we didn't get him yet.
Matthew and Misha.
So that's and Matthew.
Ernie, that's Misha, and that's Matthew over there.
Got it. Okay, so we'll go ahead and do Misha. And Misha, it's kind of a chopped up, it's pixelated. It's not really clear, the video, but you've been here before, haven't you?
Sorry, what?
Have we had you on the show before, Misha?
No.
All right, show virgin. All right, we'll do that. We'll go with Misha next. And let's see, Ukraine coordinator. So Student for Liberty again. All right, we'll do Misha, and then we'll go to Matthew. And is there anyone else that I need to get to before Tone goes on his travel adventure promotion?
No, that's all, Ernie.
That's okay.
All right, we'll make sure we want to cover everybody. We'll come back in a minute. We'll go to Misha, then Matthew, and then we got time, whatever anybody, you know, absolutely has to say something for them to be able to sleep. Then we'll go to Tone, and he can do his travel promotion for Ukraine. How about that?
That sounds good.
All right, we'll be back in 30 seconds.
You're listening to the best Liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's a curious thing. Make a one man weep, make another man sing. Change your heart to a little white dove. Born in a feeling.
That's the power of love. Love illusion around the world. Yep, we're in Odessa, Ukraine. There's, you know, it's just sticking its little head up everywhere. Let's go ahead and go to Misha Lavrovsky. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yo, you got to give me props, man. Did I say Lavrovsky right? No? Not that good? Okay. Misha, you're involved with Students for Liberty. But let me get that. Tell me, you look kind of young. How old are you?
I'm 19.
19, I love it, I like it a lot. Okay, now, you came to this because what? What was the issue? Was it because of the girls or something? I mean, what?
Yeah, girls also. First of all, I also as Yaroslav, he was on during the summer on the seminar, and my first meeting with ISFL team was during autumn special conference in Kiev. It was to today's special summit organized by Students for Liberty, and actually the main topic was this Ukrainian crisis. And
no, wait a minute. The main topic was what?
Ukrainian crisis and this war with Russia, Crimea annexion, and stuff like that.
You know, give me real quick, from your perspective, being a teenager, this whole, I mean, boil it down. We get such crap in the news here. The young people are what? They want to be part of NATO? They want to join the Western Central Bank of the Empire of We Rule You? Or are they like, you know, that Russia thing wasn't that bad? Or we just want to be left alone and be autonomous? I mean, what's your opinion? What were you striving for?
Actually, I can't speak for every like young people, but as for me, I just want everyone to leave Ukraine alone. And because we with this Russian aggression, we even can't make this reform because government said that, oh guys, we can't make taxes lower because they, then we will have no money for our army, and Russia will come, and there will be no Ukraine. So for me, it's just we want to be alone here to make like country great again.
It sounds like the same crap they're feeding us. At least Russia's closer to you. So
yeah,
the excitement in your age, is it a few people? Is it the smartest guys in the room? Is it they're building a plan to bring in more, or is there a lot of support? I mean, is it just that they just need to know you exist and go, yeah, what you guys said? How easy is it for Students for Liberty to have a presence on the campuses?
It's not hard, but the problem is that like there is a really great amount of people who are open for these ideas, who are actually even libertarians, but they even don't know about it, because it was the same with me. I don't like taxation. I don't like when government tell me what I can do, what I can't. And there is most of the same with other teenagers, other students. And what we are doing right now here is promoting this idea, giving knowledge to these people, and they say, yeah, just like, yeah, I mean the same, but I don't know that there are some guys like Friedman, Ayn Rand, and other great, really great people with their works. So we're just giving this idea, giving knowledge, and becoming like larger and larger every day.
Push Rothbard! Push Rothbard! All right, this is, you know, I'm excited for you guys because I know how powerful this is when you got, so they were like, thank God, I thought I was the only one or I was crazy or something. It was like, yep. And of course, having the government against you always helps too because it, you know, it bolsters your credibility. Now let's go ahead and go to Matthew. Matthew Kwasiborski, American. Yeah, even with a full mouthful like that, you're American. Okay, so maybe we can understand you better. Matthew, tell me your story, man. What are you doing there?
I'm an American that lives in Prague, and I work for an organization called the Fund for American Studies that runs a summer school in Prague for students in the region. But I feel very passionate about what happened here in Ukraine. I came here in December of 2013, kind of on a job mission. And that's when things started flaring up in the city of Lviv and Kiev. And when I was in Lviv at that time, December 2013, I started looking around 2 or 3 days into my trip and realized that these people are fighting for their future and they're fighting for it now. And if it's not going to happen now, it's never going to happen. So in the last year and a half, I've been, since December 2014, I've been in Ukraine about 13 times. Trying to do some groundwork here in Kiev, Odessa, and Lviv, and trying to establish another institute in Lviv, Ukraine, which is in the west. It's kind of in the, yeah, it's in the west. It used to be part of Poland at one time. It's a beautiful city. It kind of reminds me, I think, of what Prague must have looked like in 1995. The passion of the people here, the future that they want to achieve. I mean, they're very dedicated, but there's so much assistance that we can provide through education, especially on the leadership level and the political level, especially also in the economic level. And I've just taken a lot of passion with the people. I mean, you come here, you're very much welcomed by the people. They respect you, and they really want you to show you how beautiful their country is. But it really hit me in the heart, you know, when I realized these people are fighting for their freedom and their future. And I had the chance to go on the plane back to Prague or to America. And that's why I keep calling back to you.
Well, tell me, you know, this event that you're at, it's kind of a, looks like a wide representation, a swath of, you know, there's a second year in Ukraine there that Glenn's been, you know, promoting some events. I'm going, yeah, how'd you guys all get together there right now? What's going on?
Right. So I've been coming to Glenn's camps for about 2 or 3 years now, thanks to Jacek, who did the Prague summer school. So then I met Glenn, and I do a workshop on leadership, advancing cultures and leadership, trying to talk about different styles of leadership, different personalities and things like that. Just trying to give an overall perspective of how the West kind of views leadership, whether it's in a company, an NGO, or education, and that's what is sort of my specialty.
Oh, there's one way?
Okay. Not one way, but I'm saying, like, you know, there's several different styles and personalities, and just trying to introduce each one of them.
Donna has, you got all the links and everything, all these guys, right, Donna, and the archive and stuff? You know, whatever we don't have, I need you guys to send to Donna all the links, because I know people listening are going to be interested to click on and go to all your efforts and may want to support. Because when you, like you're saying, Matthew, I mean, when you have an entire country and youth that went through what they have over the last few years, economics, political, military, you know, everybody wants to get a piece of, I'm going, yeah, this is a really good opportunity. But I want to, before we end the show, let's go back to Tone. Tone, all right, man, you wanted to do a Ukraine commercial. Go.
All right. So, as you know, I've been on your show a lot of times, and I'm always traveling. I always take these things remotely. So what with me is, since I quit my job a year ago, I know you always say on your show how I have all this money. In reality, I don't. So I try to stay away from expensive countries. I try to stay away from euro. Everything on the euro is expensive. I know not every country is. I just came from Amsterdam, and it was too expensive. I can't stay too long in Amsterdam. I'm off to Vietnam next. And up to this point, Vietnam and Thailand were my ideal destination, because your dollars, your euros, your pounds, they go so far. And people were telling me Ukraine is just as cheap, and I didn't believe them until I got here. And it's really great. The people are great. You can get by on English. I mean, if you know Russian, it helps. Obviously, Ukrainian is the main language. But if you can come out here to Odessa, it's great. I mean, hotel rooms, it's not the best hotel, but it does the job. $20 a night. You can get some of the best food, an amazing meal for like $5 to $6 a plate. I know it's bad for the Ukrainian economy that the currency devalued so much. But if you're traveling, you're looking for a great destination for the cheapest vacation ever and have a great time, I strongly recommend it. I think I'm coming back here a month from now. I was thinking about another event to speak here, but I wasn't sure. Now that I came out here for Glenn's event, I'm pretty sure I'm coming back. I mean, it's great. I'm having a great time. Everyone is afraid. Even my parents were like, why are you going to Ukraine? There's a war going on. You don't feel it at all. People are really nice. You can even walk around the streets at night. It feels pretty safe. I honestly recommend Odessa for those that are looking for a destination spot where the dollar goes far.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of cultural history there and so on. Is it ornate? I mean, has it kind of got that, you know, Russian pointy roof building thing going on? You know, is there a lot of places to go outdoors, being able to climb mountains, ride your bike, and you feel pretty safe doing it?
I mean, I wasn't out a lot. I've only been here a few days, 3 or 4 days, and we kind of been in the parts where there are people. I don't know what it's like if you go out, you know, outside of populated areas. I mean, that's Vlad maybe can tell you that. But if you're staying to populated areas, there's not that much tourism here. It's mostly just Russian and Ukrainian, very, very few tourists. And it's a pretty good destination. It's perfect for me, who I don't like major populated areas, like even like Hong Kong, and not a huge fan. I go there, but I prefer places like this. I don't know if anybody else wants to add something.
We just hit the end of the show, so this is in the post archive. So anybody wants to, you know, promote where they should be going. I mean, we got guys from, you know, America, Africa, Poland, Hawaii, you know, all over there, and they. In agreement with you? Is Odessa kind of, hey man, you know, Odessa doesn't suck. We might do some effort here. Should they go to Odessa or Ukraine? Is it a tourist spot for everybody, you think?
Arizona.
Yeah, I know.
Ernie, want to introduce you to one more speaker at the that was at the event.
I missed somebody. Damn it!
No, he wasn't on the list. It's a last minute addition.
All right, go.
I work for him.
Who are we talking to? There we go. Who we got?
I'm Dave Hutzelman. I'm from Houston, Texas.
Ah, what's been your experience there? What do you think? You know, first thing, tell me, coming from Houston's very...
I've been friends of libertarians for quite a while. I was Texas's first libertarian candidate for governor back in 1982.
Oh, you got a full dose of everything. All right, now let me go ahead and ask this question. Phoenix is really dry, hot. Houston is really humid and, oh my God, hot. And, you know, there in Odessa, what's the weather like now?
It's actually pretty nice. It's much better than Houston, and certainly better than any weather I've had in Phoenix when I've been there. So it's pretty reasonable.
All right, cool. Well, I'm glad. So tell me, you know, what the hell are you doing in Odessa?
I've been hanging around with Glenn for the last 10 years or so. I've been to about 10 English camps around the world, and it's kind of a tourism and political activism combination.
Okay, let me ask you this. As you're walking the streets, at what age do you have most of the people? If you go up to a 23-year-old, can you pretty much expect them to speak English or not?
I haven't struck up a conversation with too many people on the street. I haven't been out running around very much lately, so I don't know. I can't answer that question, I guess.
And I'll try a little bit. Like, the average person, possibly not, but enough do. But the most important part is when you walk into a hotel, when you walk into a restaurant, the waiters can kind of understand. And all the restaurants I've went to, they all had an English menu along with a Russian menu. So as far as going to eat and going into a restaurant and going into a more modern place like a shopping mall, it has not. I mean, I can speak Russian, but I also have tried English, and they can conversate a little bit. Oh, and you're going to like this part. You buy bottles of wine at a supermarket that are pretty good for under $3 U.S.,
Really? And if you drink it,
have a lot of fun here.
If you drink it in the park, do you get shot or what?
No, it's great.
You can just walk down the road and drink.
Not any problem.
Yeah, but they're not smoking marijuana on the sidewalk, though, huh?
Not so much.
Not so much. Okay. I'm sorry, Glenn. You wanted to say something?
The beaches are beautiful too.
Oh.
This is a seaside resort town, so it's quite scenic.
Well, Odessa, I always kind of got the impression Odessa was, what was it, oil and caviar or something. I mean, you know, it's so I'm just wondering, the oil industry there, is it taking a hit?
Oh, Ernie, it's a good question, but yeah, but there are some places where we still kind of having an opportunity to get some oil, but the most of it were like more closer to Crimea, you know, like we kind of lost the territories with the occupation and annexation. So, but still, yeah, economically, Odessa is like based on this. But the more important thing here is a harbor port. So a lot of ships with items around the world are coming here to Odessa, and this is a very powerful economical.
Okay, before I let you guys go, I want to get kind of a bead for the audience and for myself, just out of curiosity. The Ukraine, I'm wondering, did they feel, even though the U.S. did their crap that they always do, and this is our guy, and he'll rule you the way we want you to get ruled or whatever, did the Ukrainian people feel liberated from Russia? Are there still some parts of Ukraine that just as soon be part of Russia? Is Ukraine starting to identify as its own country without alignment? Kind of give me the feeling of the people. Where are they at? Do they feel liberated or occupied? What?
I can give you an example from the Odessa, because 2 years ago, for example, here were very a lot of bloody moments on the streets, because some people were going for the separatist movements, and let's say more people in Odessa were supporting the idea to be more close with Russia or even join the kind of a union. But nowadays, I see on the streets here, it's like today, for example, there are a lot of people, like even the taxi drivers, who were in the past just telling that Russia is the best country and we could be successful just doing them. But right now, when you sit in the taxi driver car, you see the Ukrainian flag, or if you speak with them about the politics, maybe they're not so active. But anyway, the most of the people switch to the idea that anyway we should be united. And
when's your next national election?
We need to be like more liberal, and probably we need to get off of the corruption stuff which we have. This is
When's your next election? When's the next national Ukrainian election?
In 1.5 years.
Okay, you guys building up towards that? You think you're going to get to have a say? Oh my God, you might win something? I mean, you know, what's your goal?
Yeah, definitely, we are preparing for that. And I think the young leaders, like we are here, we are kind of the future.
Well, what kind of structure do you have? Is it a parliament? Is it a, you know, two-party house, Senate? How is it structured?
There are two main parties, and honestly, there are some members in these parties who basically came from the last president which we had. I mean, it's kind of a new faces, but still they are playing the same game which we had from the last president, Yanukovych. So there are still some, like, you know, bad people in this.
But how do they get to buy? I want to know the structure by which you're going to be on some ballot for them to vote for. I mean, you go, I want to, Vlad wants to have his name on the ballot, damn it. You know, I'm going to run for king of the world or something. How do you do that? I mean, what is the requirement for you to be an option for people to support?
Should be just honest. You should organize events and invite maybe or build a network with some other foreign countries about the business or some economical issues, and for example to open our country for investors or whatever. Well, because
he's asking how would you get on the ballot?
Thank you.
How would you personally get on the ballot?
So yeah, I mean, you got to get 5 billion signatures? You got to create a new party? What?
What's
the process?
You should, of course, to finance some money into our economy. There is like, I'm not really know how much this amount of money, but you need to show that you have some background and you are the leader of a good,
Well, that's one thing that you need a year and a half to find out how, you know, pick me or not, or stop picking, and you're still voting? Why are you voting? Or if you're going to vote for me, and how are they going to vote for it? I'm interested in that. I'm going to be following you, Vlad, because I know you're like, you know, yeah, I got ideas and I'm pretty, okay? So I know how this is in your head, but there's the mechanism of actually having the option to support your campaign or whatever party or a third effort. Not that I care. You're still voting. I don't care. But the thing is that option to play politics, you know, I think that would be interesting. So let's go ahead and, you know, we'll stay in touch. The gentleman from Houston, I got a couple of other questions I wanted to ask him before we go. You know, your involvement there, you traveling around, I know Glenn Kripes kind of motivated, you know, from goes to retirement, he's like goes to the mother country of his grandparents and wanted to do some good. Why are you there?
Yeah, it's a kind of a second career. I worked for an oil company in Texas for a number of years. It was pretty hard to give vent to all my political activities and run some local libertarian campaigns there. So when I retired, I was looking for something to do, and I happened to run into Glenn in Prague when I went to an ISIL conference. And so I've been hanging around with him for about the last 10 years, been around the world a few times. And I have a local TV talk show in Houston that I moderate from a the Libertarian hour-long talk show.
So how do you feel all your travels around with Glenn and so on? I mean, you know, I've been very supportive of Glenn's effort, Language of Liberty, you know, because Language of Liberty, for those that don't know, is English. I mean, and you go to Europe, we're making a big deal out of we translate Freedom's Phoenix into dozens of languages, and they go, I don't know why we all speak English better than this translator caveman talk here you got. So I'm going, oh, I didn't even think of that. You know, so a lot of these young people already speak English. And I'm wondering, as you're traveling around the world, what are the hot spots? Where is the, you know, where the freedom message is really, oh, that's going to be the new America over there. You know, what's some places that you really got a good vibe from?
I think I get a good vibe from all the places that Glenn goes to. I mean, we don't have a crowd of thousands, but the crowds we do attract are very interested in the freedom ideas and so forth. So I've been to Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan with him, and Armenia and Albania, India. Yeah, you know, it's kind of a political tourism deal with me, and he's a good guy to hang around with, and we usually find some drinking we can do in the process.
There you go. You know, Glenn, I got it. You know, we'll end up on this. You know, I got to ask, man. You know, has there been anybody in opposition or organized? Oh, hell no, you're so not allowed. Your wife kind of went through this. Hey, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say. You know, when you do your events, is there some organized effort or you didn't get the freaking permit?
Mostly no, but our best example of what you have in mind.
Turn the camera a little bit, please.
What? What's that?
No, I just wanted to turn the camera so I could see you a little bit better.
Okay. Yeah, the best example is we were in Ethiopia 18 months ago, and we were expected to get a permit to have a meeting. Our local organizer did not do that. He thought that we could fly under the radar by meeting at a private restaurant. And we thought that 20 or 25 students would not attract attention. But these students, during the morning lectures, were sending text messages to their buddies. And they said, this is good stuff. You should come. And by mid-afternoon, we had 80 students packing the garden. And this attracted the attention of the authorities. When we finished up at 5 o'clock and went back to our hotel, the authorities arrested two of the students plus our taxi driver and held them for 24 hours until we ransomed them.
Based on what? You didn't have a permit?
They ended up being nice and saying that next time we should get a permit. What they were worried about is that we were doing opposition politic work. And when they actually observed, they could see two old white Western guys giving lectures in English. They realized we were not opposition politicians and we were not a threat. But they were
as far as they know.
yeah, they picked the wrong ones for sure.
they
couldn't understand what we were saying. It's a good thing if they had known what the ideas we were talking about. But we don't criticize. I mean, we don't actually, you know, objectively, what we say is not a threat. We talk about how jobs are created. We talk about
threat.
We talk about
threat. Threat.
But Ernie, if I have a minute, I want to
please
try to draw a connection here. Starting with ISIL 25 years ago, I've known Ken and Lee for 25 years, and I was inspired by their conferences. I was inspired by the way they teach. They worked in Lithuania nearly 20 years ago. They organized what were the first English camps that I eventually went to. So I went there in 2004. I got inspired. I said, I want to do this, but I want to move it to other countries. I want to expand it. So I did not invent the concept, but my contribution is to sort of franchise, to figure out how to open new camps in new countries. And the people that you've met, the people you've met in Phoenix, starting with Jacek, now because of Jacek, we met Vlad, we met Deji. ISIL propagated Language of Liberty. Language of Liberty propagating these camps in different countries. And now we're finding, as our colleagues grow older, they have to find new ones. Our friends from Students for Liberty, they're not going to be students forever. They will need, one of their big challenges is finding new leaders, finding people, training them, finding people to succeed them. So one step leads to another. And after 10 years, we can be very proud of the new branches, the new networks. Now, I can't claim credit for Students for Liberty. That happened independently of me, but it's very, very exciting. Our projects are very complementary, and it's very nice to work together with them wherever we can.
No, I'm seeing the synergy. You know, I've been working with you for years. You know, going over there, I knew it was going to happen just by you freaking being there. You know, the injection of, you know, libertarian infection into the bone marrow of world politics, for which there is no cure. I mean, you know, this is the infection has already happened.
Yes, and I know that you appreciate the feeling sometimes, maybe not today, but sometimes we've all felt like, you know, all our passion for liberty and all our preaching is for nothing. It just goes into the wind and doesn't affect anybody. But this project has taught me differently, and, you know, we can see the results. We can see following some of our students, and they open new camps. They join Students for Liberty. They open new chapters on campuses. They translate books. They organize events. There really is an influence. It's not hopeless. We really do make progress.
No, I'm with you, brother. The Libertarian National Convention, the resurrection of the old Libertarian Party wing of the Libertarian Party, kind of leave me alone-ish young people dominated, and the excommunication of a lot of the compromising influence that have been leaking in. I mean, we got this Johnson Weld thing going on, but I saw, you know, a lot of good representation of this philosophy re-injected back into America, which is, you know, we need it.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. Just one more point is, you know, as I said at the beginning, Ukraine is an exciting place because there is a sense that people can change the future. They can change it for the better, and they can do it nonviolently. And so a lot of our students are motivated to do things like writing, like publishing, like speaking, like doing consulting, personal relations, public relations work. A few of our students have jobs in the offices. They're on the staffs of members for parliament.
Now,
you and I are skeptical of political activity, but it's nice to know that the people who are doing it are hearing libertarian ideas.
No, I get involved in politics. I run for office like always. I have a lot of, you know, it's not that I don't use politics. I just don't vote. I mean, I just can't, because I know better. You know, I know how corrupt the system is. I'm not going to support a system I don't trust. But I take advantage of the freaking opportunity. Hey, I can talk at this microphone and people will listen to me make fun of this guy. Hell yeah,
sure.
We can do that all day long. So I don't want to discourage them from, you know, from getting in the political process. I just don't want them to look at voting as some mechanism that's going to free them. That's a side effect of just an opinion, you know. So it's a different way of looking. Hey, thanks for, you know, spending this time with us. Is there any, you know, we're going to have all the links and the web pages and everything, and whatever we're missing when Donna sends you the MP3 file and the videos and so on of this. Please go ahead and respond with whatever links that you want her to include in the archive so that we get everything.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, wonderful. Thanks so much for having us, Ernie.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye, Ernie.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Bye. Thanks for coming on. Bye.